is the Tom Hartman Program.
Greetings, friends, patriots, lovers of democracy. I am not Tom Hartman. No, I'm Danielle, here with Shano, in for Tom today. Lots of stuff in the news. Of course, the manhunt still going on. Lots of people focusing in on the TPP vote taking place tomorrow, which we'll get to as well. And somehow, a huge story that has been pushed to the back burner in way too much of the corporate news media, that the Supreme Court's ruling on King v. Burwell, the Affordable Care Act subsidies, is still outstanding. We're still waiting for the Supreme Court justices, the kings and queens of this country, as Tom likes to say they call themselves or think of themselves, are still waiting to tell us whether or not we can have subsidies for health insurance. Joining us now to talk about it is Igor Volsky, director of video and contributing editor to Think Progress, co-author of Howard Dean's Prescription for Real Healthcare Reform. You can follow him on Twitter at Igor Volsky. Igor, thank you so much for joining us today.
Good to be with you guys.
So for anybody who may not be familiar with this case, what is at stake in King v. Burwell, and what could happen if the justices rule against the healthcare law?
Well, the basic question before the court is, does the Affordable Care Act allow subsidies, tax credits, to flow towards the states that chose not to establish their own insurance marketplace? There's 34 of those states, and instead relied on the federal government to build those marketplaces for them. There's about six words in the ACA that are being challenged. The exchange, the law says, should be established by the state. And so the two sides are arguing. On one side, of course, you have the government saying that Congress, the president, the authors of this law always intended for subsidies to flow towards everybody, whether they be enrolled in a federal established exchange or in a state-based exchange. And on the other side are conservative advocates, Republicans in the Congress also, who say, this language is very clear. It says that subsidies only flow to the exchanges established by the state and not the federal government. And thus, for those 6.4 million people who get their health care coverage through a federally established exchange, those subsidies are illegal, and thus they have to be cut off.
So what happens, in theory, in practicality, if the Supreme Court justices come out and say, no, this is unconstitutional, this was clearly meant to be exchanges established by the states, it's coercion, like the Medicaid ruling that we saw previous to this, what happens to the people who are currently collecting or benefiting from Obamacare subsidies?
Well, it's pretty scary. About 6.4 million people would lose subsidies in those federal exchanges, which means that they would have to pay the full cost of premiums and of out-of-pocket expenses. And not only that, but because some individuals will no longer get subsidies, and it's about 80 to 85% of everyone who buys coverage through the exchanges is eligible for subsidies, because they'll lose those dollars, many will choose not to buy insurance at all. And so you're really going to have what's called a death spiral, where the people who really aren't sick and say, hey, if I can't get a subsidy for this coverage, if it can't be cheaper for me, I'm just going to go without. And the only folks who remain in the insurance are sicker people who are going to pay any price, really, because they can't afford not to have health insurance because they're sick. And so premiums are going to get more and more expensive because it costs just a lot more to insure very sick people who always have claims, as opposed to that balance that insurance is supposed to strike, where healthy people pay the claims of the sick people. And when those healthy people fall ill, a new population of healthy cover their costs.
I want to quickly remind everybody, we're speaking with Igor Volsky, director of video and contributing editor over at Think Progress. ThinkProgress.org is the website where, if you go and do a little digging into this topic, you'll see that about 10,000 people could possibly die every year if they don't have health coverage. Is that a fair number? Is that, why aren't more people concerned about this?
Well, they should be, absolutely. That number, I believe, comes from Harvard researchers, and it's a bit disputed the methodology they use, but broadly speaking, there are certainly thousands and thousands and thousands of people across this country who are very ill, who, if these subsidies go away, won't be able to afford their health care coverage, will maybe at best have a gap in coverage, or at worst, not have coverage at all. And I think the other thing to highlight here is the people pushing these lawsuits are conservatives and certainly Republicans in Congress who have written amicus briefs to the court in support of getting rid of these subsidies. But the truth is, the states that are going to lose out on this, the 34 states that chose not to establish their own exchanges, are mostly Republican-led states. And so Republicans here are really arguing against their own constituents because they're the ones who are going to be hurt if the federal dollars go away.
But couldn't they theoretically just fix this scenario by either establishing their own exchanges or pressuring their lawmakers to correct these six words, to say that the subsidies apply to federal or state exchanges? I mean, these seem like easy fixes if we don't account for gridlock in Washington.
Oh, absolutely. And this is what the president, the White House, have asked Congress to do. They say you can pass a one-sentence bill, the sentence you laid out, and all of this would go away. Nobody would lose their health insurance. Premiums would not go up, and people could actually keep the coverage they have, which, of course, if you remember, during the implementation phase, that was the big Republican refrain, that people should be able to keep the coverage they currently have. And, of course, if the Supreme Court rules in favor of the plaintiffs in this case, millions will lose the insurance they currently possess.
Now, I guess it's fair that when it comes to the Supreme Court and Congress, I'm a bit of a cynic. Is it possible that the Republicans actually want these subsidies to be taken away? They want that death spiral in the insurance market so then they can deregulate it and privatize any bits that the government may still be running?
Well, Republicans certainly believe that the government shouldn't have a role in helping people buy health insurance or really regulating insurers or insurer markets to ensure that everyone can have access to insurance, even the sickest among us. And so if you look at the array of replacement alternatives that they've offered, there's about five or six bills, and they're all built on this concept that insurance, health insurance, should abide by free market principles. And if you just let the market run wild, people will be able to buy cheaper products, or sick people will be able to somehow find coverage themselves because the market will dictate the price and will meet the demand. But of course, we saw what happened before the Affordable Care Act became law, which is this very market had left some 45, 46 million people without health insurance.
Yeah, and I myself have a long background of working in insurance, and there's only a half dozen or so big players in the market throughout the country, so I don't understand the Republican argument of, trading across state lines or deregulating and allowing these six companies or so to do what they want, how that's going to affect prices. But I digress. I apologize. Igor, what can people listening do? Is pressuring their state and local lawmakers any help?
Well, I think so, and there are some states who are drafting contingency plans, and what are they going to do if this these dollars go away? I certainly think pressuring those local lawmakers, particularly in the 34 states that don't have the exchange, is helpful, and writing Congress, writing your representative.
Thank you, Igor. I'm sorry. We're out of time, but follow Think Progress. They'll help you know what to do.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Igor Volsky, director in video and contributing editor at Think Progress. Thank you, Igor. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Danielle here with Shano. Tom is out today, but we are sitting in, taking your calls, getting your thoughts, especially on the healthcare law.
Yeah, I have to say, when this law first came down the pike, I was like, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? I thought the entire thing was a bunch of nonsense.
You mean
the whole case, these four words. I mean, we all had a general understanding what this law was about. We know, we can hear, we can go back to the speeches that the president was giving, those who were supporting the bill were giving on the floor. We knew what this was about. There was certain parts to this law. There was, everyone had to get insurance. The insurance companies were going to have to cover everyone in certain ways. And we were going to, this law was going to make things more affordable. One of the ways was to expand Medicaid. And the other thing was the subsidies. And the subsidies were going to go to the states and they were going to establish these exchanges. And there was nothing about, well, it's only going to go to some of the states. This was for everybody. We all understood this. So when this lawsuit came down the pike and I looked at the law, I'm like, this is crazy. And sure enough, it's before the Supreme Court now.
Yeah. It's a thinly veiled attempt to destroy the law.
Not even thinly veiled. No.
But the fact is, this is just another example of where these corporate Republican ideas, the desire to completely deregulate the insurance market, which, let's face it, up until the Affordable Care Act, and some would even argue continuing after, doesn't have enough regulation. That's my personal opinion. And they don't care about the human cost. These subsidies are not just money in people's pockets.
It actually, the money never goes into a person's
right.
pocket. This money goes directly to the insurance companies
right.
themselves.
Right. You know, currently, according to it, there's a great summary post over at Kaiser Health Network where they're just breaking down basic data, basic facts. Subsidized enrollees would face an average effective premium increase of 287% if the court rules against the administration. So the price of their insurance plans would go up an average of, let's say, 300%, just to round easily.
It would triple.
And that applies to more than 6 million people. So that 6 million people would, for the most part, immediately no longer be able to afford their insurance, which, just as Igor so detailed and well explained, that can create a death spiral in the market that really affects people's lives.
Right. Well, you have people who are a little bit healthier or have that I'm going to live forever syndrome saying I'll just take the tax hit. So you have that. The mandate stays in place, individual mandate. So you're going to have 5 million people clamoring to say, get rid of the mandate. That's what conservatives really want, for people to start turning out in droves against the bill.
Right, but the mandate.
And then, let me finish. And then the politics of it, there is a simple solution to fix this, but the Republicans are not going to make the solution simple.
Right, but we also need to be clear, because Republicans are going to use that mandate talking point
sure.
to try and get support for repealing the whole law, destroying
exactly.
the whole
That's
law. The mandate only applies if your insurance premium would be more than 8% of your income. So lots of people, you know, if you're
that's true.
Low
that's right.
income, you're going to be exempt from the mandate. And
in fact, that's the plaintiffs in this case.
Right.
If they would be in that position, that's how they're able to bring this case.
Right.
With the subsidies, they didn't amount to 8% of their income. So they had to either buy the insurance or pay the penalty. Without the subsidies, it would be greater than 8%. So they wouldn't be liable for the tax penalty if they didn't buy insurance. That's how they got in front of court
right.
on this one.
Right. It begs the question on how a party can call themselves the pro-life party.
Yeah.
And then actively work to undermine the very subsidies that are helping keep people alive
right.
and healthy.
And this goes away, I would imagine, relatively quickly. And the Republicans are dragging their feet. And what they're going to want to do is use this as a bargaining chip, saying, okay, you want this to be fixed? First of all, we want to blame the president and see it was Obamacare, Obama's fault. So we're going to, try to turn the conversation against, even though it was Congress that put these four words in at some point. We don't know when. It wasn't intended to be there. Then it's going to be, okay, if you want this little change, then we want to do A through Z over here. And guess what A through Z is? Every little health care goodie they could possibly put in there and deregulation and essentially strip away the rest of the bill.
Right.
Under the guise of reform.
Right. Exactly. It could really affect a lot of people. I mean,
right.
I can think of personal examples in my life, friends and family members who for the first time were able to afford insurance,
mm-hmm.
get preventative care
because
of this law.
And hearing that and the glee and the relief in their voice and in the way they were looking at life at that point, the relief it brought them to have that.
Right.
And they just want to rip it away.
Right.
on a technicality, on four words that were not intended to be in there.
This country just started making some stride, you know, making up for some lost ground in terms of health care and health care related, you know, statistics. Right now, 9 out of 10 adults have health insurance. That is big news. That it shouldn't be in the richest developed nation on earth, but it is. You know, we're just starting to work on and try and correct the areas where we've declined against other developed nations, like infant mortality and obesity and heart disease and maternal death rates, mothers dying in childbirth or while carrying a child. You know, we used to be within the top 5 nations on the planet as of just the year 2000, as far as how well we cared for mothers in this country. We are now number 33 on that list. Now, if you are a woman and you're pregnant, you have a 1 in 1,800 risk of dying from that pregnancy.
Incredible.
Yeah. But let's take away healthcare, because that's going to do really well for mother and baby. So anyhow, we want to know your thoughts. Just like we heard some amazing stories when we were talking about the cut to Social Security disability that Republicans pulled off at the beginning of the year, and we're still would love to hear your stories on that. But how would losing subsidies affect your life? Would you lose your health care? Are you finally able to care for that illness that perhaps you were putting off? Do you finally have some financial security that maybe you didn't have before because of high premiums? We want to hear your stories. Give us a call, 202-536-3270. We'll be back with more.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
What does this King v. Burwell ruling mean to you? Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Danielle, here with Shano, in for Tom today, taking your calls and getting your thoughts on, you know, whatever's in the news. It is anything goes summer, but the question we'd love answered is what the ACA subsidies, the Obamacare subsidies, mean to you, and what would happen if those subsidies were taken away. And Vi, let me click the line there. Vi in Donovan, Missouri, is it Vi, wants to share her thoughts.
Oh, wrong. I have had health care now for 2 years. And it's from the federal exchange. If it goes away, my next purchase will be a wheelchair, because I'm hoping to get some orthopedic surgery done. And if I can't, my next step will be a wheelchair. And I'm 55 years old, and I hate to think about living the rest of my life, you know, in a wheelchair, but that's what's going to happen to me.
Because the wheelchair would be the less expensive option than surgery if you didn't have the insurance.
My condition will deteriorate without surgical interventions, to the point that I will only be able to ambulate with a wheelchair.
Yeah, it should not come to that point in this country. You know,
I mean, these are the situations the Supreme Court needs to hear.
Right.
You know, they take it in such an antiseptic way. Oh, what does this case back then mean according to these words, and what's the legal arguments? I mean, people's mobility, Fi's mobility, her quality of life is on the line in their decision this month.
Right. And at 50, I'm sorry, Vi, you said 55 years old. That's a lot of life left. You know, that you should be confined to a wheelchair because somebody wants to privatize insurance.
Right, and I've had this condition all of my life. It's called congenital hip dysplasia. I was born with it, and my hips have literally worn out because they were never in proper alignment to start with. And like I said, I've had health care for 2 years, and you have no idea what that did to improve the quality of my life. And I may have located a surgeon that might be able to do these procedures, but that will be out of my that'll be out of my reach if the Obamacare goes away.
Well, Vi, thank you for sharing that story. It is quite powerful, and I wish you the best. I wish, you know, that we wouldn't even have to have this conversation, but I really hope that the lawmakers who refuse to set up state exchanges, as well as the lawmakers who refuse to fix these six words in the law, are listening to Vi's story and recognizing that this is a human cost. This is not just words on a piece of paper and deregulating a market.
In elections and popularity polls. This is human beings' lives.
Right. But thank you very much. Let's check in with William in Weatherford, Texas, listening on KTNF.com. That's a mouthful. Thanks, William, for listening to the Tom Hartman program.
Thanks. Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a couple of questions about these challenges the Republicans have mounted against the law. Why wouldn't this fly in the face of equal protection?
Meaning if subsidies are given to one person that everybody should be eligible?
Yes, and taken away from other states. That just flies completely against logic about that, doesn't it?
Well, under the 10th, different states can supply different things to different, you know, for example, if Alaska gives $2,000 for oil in their state to every one of their residents, they don't have to give it to New York either. So equal protection isn't necessarily, you have the same set of rules for every single state.
But aren't these federal subsidies?
They are federal subsidies. It's a good question, but.
Yeah, totally withheld if you're in the wrong state. That just seems wrong.
I agree.
The only reason is that they have to willfully misread four words of a giant, 900-page law.
And very well said. Willfully misread.
Yeah.
I love that phrase, William. I may borrow it from you. And please, you had another question.
Yes. Why can't we start demanding that our media spokesmen take Republicans to task when they make their proclamations about this law as they've been doing for 5.5-6 years? They always speak in generalities. If you notice, it's always these sweeping proclamations that, you know, we're losing our freedoms and these mandates. And whenever they say mandate, you notice they always say, like, plural, like there must be 30 of them or something. And why won't our guys at least ask them to be specific and say, please state one thing about this law that's wrong?
Yeah.
And then when they go to mandate, they say, well, one other thing besides the mandates, because I don't think they can do it.
Right.
I really don't.
And a lot of times when they do follow up, you just get another pronouncement, another generalization after that. And it's really difficult to pin these people down.
Yeah, and, you know, I know Tom's covered it. I know other people have covered it. I know Chuck Todd openly admitted it on his show that a lot of times if they go after these Republicans, or I assume the same would be said for many top-ranking Democrats, they won't come back on the show. And I think that that is an insult to the American people that they don't answer to us in an electoral sense. You know, they're answering to the billionaires. The least they could do is be honest with us and forthright in the media.
No specifics. That's it. They'll never give you one. And the funny thing is there are some specific things that are lacking in this law.
Sure.
And one of them is, of course, I don't think it's quite as strict as it should be on some of the little loopholes and insurance companies have found to kind of get this here and there.
I agree.
But those are small things. They are limited to the 80-40 profit, 80-20 profit rule, and that in itself is magnificent.
Yes.
But they won't bear down on anything specific. And I think if they would, we could at least ask them if they remove this law in total, how it's a good thing for us to suddenly start putting Medicare Part D back on the credit card, like they did for 6 years before the law was passed. There were $2 trillion added to our deficit for that law alone.
Yeah, well,
and the ACA fixed it.
Right.
Yeah.
They just tout this magical, mythical free market and that it's going to fix everything. I used to work for nearly a decade, you know, looking at insurance company contracts and the contracts that they held between doctors and hospitals and those insurance companies for hospitals and facilities all over the country. And I can tell you that those contracts were exactly the same in Alabama as they were in Washington State, as they were in New York State, because you only have a half dozen companies there making the rules, deciding what they will cover and how much they will cover. And it's a race to the bottom. And anybody who says that some free market is going to magically fix things doesn't recognize that the insurance companies already have as much freedom as they want. That's the problem, not the solution.
And buying across state lines only encourages states, as they do now in terms of tax cuts to get businesses to come in, to compete with each other, to deregulate to the point where they're going to attract the half dozen insurance companies to their state, like has happened with credit cards or with incorporation papers, and they will deregulate, trying to draw those businesses in to nothing. And then all the insurance companies will go to that one state, and everyone's going to have to buy from there. So it buying across state lines is absolute 100% deregulation of the insurance industry. It is not a free market solution, as they so touted.
Yep. But William,
just another dodge.
Excellent point, and I just wrote down your phrase here, willfully misread the law. I think that's one we need to get out there in the lexicon, because it's a perfect description. And thank you very much for spending the day with us there in Weatherford,
I wonder how many of the
Texas.
Supreme Court justices read the entire bill.
Yeah.
Or the entire law, I'm sorry.
I imagine they probably read a lot of what's in
I've
front
seen
of them.
The briefs.
I'm
I mean,
sure
they stack up. But I mean, the entire, because the argument of the government and the supporters of the Affordable Care Act is that in context, these four words make no sense, and that's not what was intended by Congress nor the president when he signed it.
Yeah.
So in order to determine intent or how it fits into the context of the bill, would they not then have to read the entire bill?
Well, I'd say
or at
the
least
question,
certain portions of
yeah,
it.
I'd say the question that I would really, like to know is not whether or not they read it, but how they read it. You know, it's kind of like when you're writing a paper, or Shane, you probably know, I imagine writing some type of legal argument is like this, where you decide the conclusion you want beforehand, and then you do the research, you do the reading to support that conclusion. And I could see several of the justices.
Oh, sure. That's the long history.
Looking at it in that framework.
Many people have postulated that the Supreme Court is presented with they know each one of them knows what Z is, and they just got to write B to Y.
Yeah.
And they will figure out a way to get there.
Yeah.
The law be damned.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think it's entirely true, but there probably is some truth to that.
Yeah. Do we have time for one quick one?
One, yes.
All right. Let's check in with Ann, listening on Sirius in Livingston, Texas, from Texas to Texas. Thank you for listening to the Tom Hartman program, Ann.
Oh, hi. Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. So I'm self-employed, and I bought Texas Blue Cross Blue Shield. I renewed it, actually. But they told me I still had to pay the federal penalty because they don't adhere to Obamacare rules in that they don't cover pre-existing conditions. Oh. I don't have a pre-existing condition.
Right.
So they covered me, but they said I still have to pay the penalty, which doesn't seem fair.
It doesn't seem fair, but I would think that the insurance company should have to pay the penalty. I mean, why are they even allowed to offer a plan that doesn't meet the law?
Yeah.
Well, that's what I don't know. That's what the agent told me. I don't know if he's right or not. And I told him I had back surgery last year, but that doesn't count as a pre-existing. What they said pre-existing is like cancer, diabetes, AIDS, heart disease, those. You know, I don't have those. So they covered me, but they said, oh, but you still have to pay the penalty.
Right,
yeah,
because the insurance company itself, the insurance company itself, in order to avoid the penalty, you have to buy insurance that supplies all the things that are required under the Affordable Care Act. If an insurance policy doesn't, it's like not buying an insurance policy, according to the federal law.
Yeah, I think that they should be penalized for offering it. That's my opinion.
It covers me. I just pay $2,500 deductible, but if I break my arm or I get sick, I'm covered. But I still have to pay the penalty.
Yeah, and I would double check with somebody, maybe another insurance agent or a state regulator, just to make sure that they're not violating the law. But it certainly seems like it's like something's wrong there. I would check into it if I were you. But thank you very much for listening, and thanks for the call.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
How would it affect you if the Supreme Court willfully misreads the health care law? Welcome back to the Tom Hartman program here on Free Speech TV. Did you want to comment? No? Okay. Let's check in with John in Minneapolis, Minnesota, listening, watching on Free Speech TV, who is on their fund drive. So, as are many of your local stations. So please support them and show them that you value
you can get
having
cool
their information.
That I'm wearing.
Yeah, that cool T-shirt that Shane's got on.
Not the Capitol.
as well as the Bernie Bear behind me. Sorry, John, Minneapolis. Go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to say, first of all, everyone is going to be affected
if
this law is overturned, because it is going to suck out so much money out of the system that other people are going to see increases in their premium like you would not believe. And that is going to affect everybody. That's been predicted by a number of people. But, I mean, this is just tortured legalism. Why should we have to suffer under the weight of this kind of ridiculousness? I mean, this is just absolutely pathetic. You know, maybe, just maybe, a group of citizens should get together and use this legalism themselves, because after all, we're going to have a corporatized world, and we should hire our own corporate lawyers and see if I can't go up to Saskatchewan or Manitoba or some other country to get my health care done. You know, I mean, it's not like on the border states, or maybe, you know, we could take, you know, you know, say that Canada has an unfair advantage, or England, or any of these other countries that, that have public health care that pay a lot less than we do.
You know, it's funny that you...
I don't know.
Yeah,
I mean,
but it's funny that you bring up this point, because Shane and I were just speaking about this morning, and I am certainly not the trade or legal expert to figure this out, but it seems like there's got to be a way, you know, if they want to push through the TPP or these other trade agreements, even NAFTA, you know, why can't we use this international settlement disputes system, whatever it is, to say,
well,
why should those countries have an unfair advantage? We should have nationalized health care, too, so that our businesses can compete. Corporations shouldn't be burdened with the cost of health care when they have to compete overseas.
We should recruit the populations of other countries,
right,
who probably just look at us and are appalled. How pathetic, how absolutely pathetic to be an American where they actually just let people die, because
yes,
that is the bottom line. People, you know, some of your callers are going to end up either crippled or just dead.
Yes.
And that is the pathetic truth. These people say that they believe in life. You know, they are the holy ones, a lot of them, you know, that are touting this crap to the rest of us. I'm sorry, I'm losing my patience.
That's all right.
I completely understand. And sometimes, you know, we can't help but be frustrated and lose our patience.
Yeah. Just how inane the whole thing is. It's just so stupid. We need to call them to task for their hypocrisy.
Right.
It's absolute hypocrisy. And, you know, I know Tom doesn't like, you know, when, you know, you refer to people as evil. But frankly, those justices that overturn this law, that is an evil in my book, because if people end up dying as a result of it, then they're culpable.
Yeah, but you know what? Then you have to include the members of Congress who won't fix the law. You have to include the Republican governors who won't set up exchanges.
And by the way,
the
law has not been struck down yet.
Yes.
Yeah, we're talking about what if.
Yes.
This is still what if.
Yes, but that's why we need to call our lawmakers now. We'll be back with more. Stick around. Thank you, John. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Danielle here with Shana. We're in for Tom today. Occasionally we get asked for our Twitter handles. So just to let you know, I am at Danielle on radio and Shane is at Producer Shano. Love to hear your comments.
I follow back, but I don't often tweet.
No.
In fact, mine has turned into essentially a pro Bernie Sanders Twitter feed.
No, you tweeted today.
Oh, I did?
Yeah, you just didn't know.
That was good of me.
You just didn't know.
I'm right on top of that. Thank
I don't know how that happened.
Thank you for taking care
of
it.
It was magic. But we are taking your calls, and I, you know, it is anything goes summer, so we're not sticking only to this topic, but I think it's very important, and it gets lost in so much of the news media focused on the horse race of 2016, on the Republican quote-unquote clown car, as everybody's being referred to it. That's
mm-hmm.
a really big car. It's like a clown bus at this point.
It's a clown SUV.
Yes, but, you know, the fact that people are this close to possibly losing health care coverage is big news and needs to be talked about, if you ask me. So let's check
in. And the thing is that, as one of the callers said, you know, the conservatives like to talk in these platitudes about liberty and freedom. And what we want to do here was talk about the not the liberty and the freedom nonsense part of it, but what is really going to do. Because real true stories about what's happening to people across this nation are going to it's the only thing that really I think is going to change their minds.
Right.
In Congress, at least.
Hey, just like, I don't know if you guys remember, we for weeks had people calling in and explaining how the 20% cut to Social Security disability insurance is going to affect them. I think it's still important to bring those calls up because we still haven't fixed that problem. But these are real stories. It's not just numbers on a page. It's not platitudes and talking points. It's real people's lives. Real people like Susan watching DirecTV in Brunswick, Georgia. Thanks for calling today, Susan. Go ahead.
Yes, I wanted to speak about my experience with Obamacare.
Okay.
And I am all for the Affordable Care Act, but I think this country definitely needs to go to single payer. And I'll tell you what happened to me. I don't make a lot of money. I make under $35,000 a year. I work for a small mom and pop business. And once in a while, we do get commission on certain items that we sell. And the commission that I'm talking about could be $50 one week, and then my next commission check could be maybe the following month, and then it can be $100. So it's sort of like that. And when I first applied for the Affordable Care Act, I applied for it by phone because I don't have a computer, and I told them what my income was, sent them my documentation, my pay stub, my husband's Social Security as well. And I did mention to them, well, I do get a commission more so in the summertime, and I explained how much it could be. And then I also told them, but I don't know what that commission is, because 1 month I may get it, 1 month I may not get it. So how do you calculate that in there? And they had told me over the phone that that doesn't really matter. We're really looking for your, you know, your weekly paycheck. And I kept saying to them, because, you know, I'm older, so I know how this stuff all goes. And I said, are you sure? Positive. They don't include that commission, whatever. We really are just looking for what your weekly paycheck is. Sent all of my documentation, got a letter back saying that I get a $500 a month subsidy, which I thought was great.
Yeah,
I got the subsidy. This is very important now. And for the whole year, so I picked out a plan that would cover that whole subsidy. But I kept saying the whole year to my husband, something doesn't feel right, something doesn't sound right.
Right.
And then when I got I did my taxes in April, I found out that those little commission checks do add up.
Yes.
And I didn't go over the threshold too much, but I went over a little bit that it threw me off of the Affordable Care Act.
Wow.
So now, that $5,000 that they gave me last year, I have to pay for it now this year. I don't have $5,000.
Of course not. And it shouldn't be some arbitrary line that an accountant in a room somewhere decides. You know, we often have this problem in so many systems that are determined by a specific dollar amount with no factor of where you live and cost of living, what your unflexible other monthly expenses are. This is a problem with student loans.
Sure.
It's a problem, obviously, with the Affordable Care Act. It's a problem in a lot of places with the, you know, Medicaid eligibility or other assistance benefits. You know, it should take more than just some arbitrary line that says over this dollar amount.
And also that original...
When I did my taxes... Oh, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
When I did my taxes, I told the tax guy, I said, how is that? And this is what they told me. And they said to me, well, I don't know why they would even say that, because that's all part of your income.
Right.
So now I understand it's not so much the documentation that you send to them. They're going by when you do your taxes the following year, and when you get your W-2 form, they're going by that. Well, I immediately called the Affordable Care Act. I spoke to a speaker, to a supervisor, and they told me, well, I don't know why that they would say that. And, I mean, I was very upset.
Of course.
You ought to go back and look at, because I know they record all the conversations. And the thing is, and then I asked the supervisor, is this happening with a lot of people? And they said, yes, a lot of people have to pay it back. So what I think has happened is the people that they trained to take these applications are just people off of the street.
Of course.
They don't know nothing about how to do this.
But, Susan, they have to start somewhere with people to train and equip, you know, staffing centers somewhere. They can't pull, you know, thousands of people who understand a brand new law out of their hat. And, yes, there are certainly examples. I'm sure this is not the only type of situation where a individual is penalized for something that's out of their control. Hopefully, those caps are increased where, you know, it shouldn't, a couple thousand dollars of your income in a year shouldn't determine whether or not you're eligible for help. But check into it. Make sure that it's correct before you pay another $5,000. But thank you very much for calling and spending time with us. We'll be back with Hedrick Smith of Reclaim the American Dream. Stick around.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Danielle, here with Shano in for Tom today. And we're trying to get a hold of our friend Hedrick Smith, among other things, author of Who Stole the American Dream and the creator of a new website, Reclaim the American Dream. It's a really great site if you guys have a few moments to check it out. And it's essentially doing something I think is so very, very important. In all the talk of subjects like healthcare, ISIS, war, education, the list
terror,
goes on.
Terror, fear,
climate change.
Yeah.
I think there is often so much that is going right in our country, but we don't get a lot of coverage of it.
And things that are going right that can then be emulated in other areas.
Right.
Duplicated.
Right.
Spread.
Success stories.
Mm-hmm.
But those are the kind of things you will find over at Reclaim the American Dream. He has several success stories. One is particularly relevant for today's news stories or today's news headlines. And his He writes, why a GOP governor embraced tuition-free community college. Talking about Governor Bill Haslam of Tennessee back a few months ago, if you guys remember, creating a plan for tuition-free community college as a cornerstone of his Drive for 55 plan, an idea to push up the number of Tennessee residents with a college degree from 32%, where it sits today, to 55%, meaning that much more of his workforce will be college educated and ready for today's challenges. I have a feeling Hedrick is calling on my cell phone for one of you guys, if one of you guys has a moment to come and grab it. So, anyhow, thank you. Thank you.
Nothing like live radio.
Nothing like live radio.
I love it.
If you want to hand that to Shane or to somebody. Anyhow, Governor Bill Haslam of Tennessee adopted this tuition-free plan, and it made me think of today's news stories about the Corinthian college students.
Oh, yeah.
And the possibility of them getting tuition relief, tuition debt relief, which is almost unheard of these days. Like, I love, there's several articles about
this.
You
can't even get tuition debt relief under bankruptcy in most cases.
Although the, we have Hedrick. So let me pick up Hedrick. He can tell us all about it. Hedrick Smith, author of Who Stole the American Dream and the creator of the wonderful website I was just telling you about. I have too many pieces of paper.
Reclaim
in front of
the American
Dream. Yes, thank you,
Hedrick.
Thank you, Hedrick. Way too many pieces of paper in front of me. How are you? Thank you so much for joining us today.
Glad to be with you. I'm glad to be inside and not outside. It's hot.
Yeah, it's a little warm out there today, huh?
Yep.
I was telling people about the success stories you have on ReclaimTheAmericanDream.org, how so often we get too focused on everything going wrong in this country and we forget to celebrate and learn from our successes. What made you start the Reclaim the American Dream website, and why did you decide to focus on success as opposed to the issues still outstanding today?
Well, thank you, Danielle. It's a great privilege to be with you, and that's a great question. I wrote this book, Who Stole the American Dream? And when I went around the country giving talks to people about it, how we got into the mess we're in, people asked me repeatedly, well, what can we do to fix it? And hasn't power in Washington been captured by the corporations and the financial elite? Isn't the power game over? Aren't we just on the sidelines? Is there anything we can do? And I kept going back to the civil rights movement of the 1960s and the women's movement of the 70s and the 80s and the environmental movement and now the movement of LGBT. And I kept pointing out to them that there were things that had gone on in American history, mostly historical, where people power had worked. And I was trying to give them encouragement and positive examples. And then I began to realize that they needed to know things that were going on now about issues that matter, student debt to people today, student debt, minimum wage, profit sharing in corporations instead of all the money going to the top 1%, how to control money in politics, how to smoke the dark money out, what to do for small donors, can you multiply and so forth their impact in campaigns. And so I began looking around at what was going on in the country, and to my own personal amazement, I found out there was a lot that was positive that was going on. And I thought, you know, if more people knew that more good stuff was going on, they would be encouraged to do something in their own home community or their own home state. If they knew that Florida, believe it or not, had a constitutional amendment to limit gerrymandering of congressional districts by political parties, Florida, you know, then maybe in Illinois and in Oregon and Connecticut and other places, they might think of doing that. If they knew that that SeaTac, a little tiny town outside of the airport in Seattle, Tacoma, had raised the minimum wage to $15, you know, by a popular vote, they might decide they could do something about raising the minimum wage. If they knew that Colorado had actually put on the ballot in 2012 a proposition that called for rolling back Citizens United decision and giving the power back to Congress and the states to regulate money in political campaigns, they might say, hey, we can do this in Montana. Actually, Montana did do it. You know, we can do this in Virginia, or we can do this in Maryland. Or what? I just thought that people don't know, and I think part of the problem is these things happen in one state or another, and maybe they get covered by the state media, but they don't get picked up much in the national media, or if they do, they're a blip and they're gone.
Right.
And people don't understand that, in fact, there's a lot of ferment and action going on in this country that's positive.
Yeah.
So I decided I got to put that together. And so the website was what I came up with, reclaimtheamericandream.org, to let people have a place where they could go and see. You can see the progress report. You can see a map of the country. You can see on the minimum wage, you can run down all 50 states. We'll tell you exactly where they are. And then if you want to see how a state did raise the minimum wage or how SeaTac did it, then there's a success story because people need nuts and bolts. They need to see how real live individuals, how local leaders, these are people whose names you don't know. Everybody says, where are we going to get the next Lincoln? Where are we going to get the next Martin Luther King? You know, where's the next genius going to come from? And the answer is, those guys, by the way, Lincoln and Martin Luther King, they were local leaders before they were national leaders. So the leadership comes at the local level. And I think that's surprising to people, but it's really important. That's how democracy works.
Yeah, I think that this is a service that is so lacking in this country. And I say service specifically because of the change that it can inspire. I noticed this most strongly with the giant protests, all the way from Occupy to the huge climate march that was put on by Bill McKibben and 350.org, and the fact that, for the most part, it was non-existent in the major media, while we can get day after day, weeks-long coverage of any type of tragic accident. How do we, you know, expand this, make people focus in on success in, we're totally going to run out of time, in the minute or so, and then we'll finish up after the next break.
Sure. Well, one thing is social media is important. I mean, I've got this on a website. I've got a Facebook page, which is reclaimtheamericandream.org, no dot. or Who Stole the American Dream, where we're putting stuff out. You put stuff out on Twitter and on LinkedIn and other social media. I think that's one of the ways that people are getting around, you know, the blind spot, if you will, the under the radar effect of the mainstream media. And I think it's, you know, we've got to take the initiative of communicating among ourselves and getting the word out. You're getting the word out right now.
Well, as are you. We have more Hedrick Smith. You don't want to go anywhere. Lots of stuff to learn. Stick around.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And in the meantime, check out ReclaimTheAmericanDream.org. We'll be right back with more Hedrick. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program here on Free Speech TV. Hedrick, I presume you remember from being here in the studio with us that we're with our non-commercial audience right now, our Free Speech TV and non-commercial viewers. Are you still with us?
I'm with you. I'm with that all the way. I like that.
Okay. One of the points you mentioned in our email exchange was celebration of Los Angeles raising their minimum wage to $15 an hour. What I also thought was great in that same state is California raising their minimum wage for the second time in 2 years, their statewide minimum wage. And it made me think of you and your work and a way we combat one of the memes that gets out there that if, you know, okay, Los Angeles raises their minimum wage to $15 an hour and people say, but that's still not enough. That's not really a living wage. Isn't California proof that we don't have to stop there, that we get to $15 an hour and we keep pushing and we celebrate our successes?
Well, I think the most important thing to see, at least to me, in the Los Angeles story, and it isn't just a Los Angeles story. By the way, just the other day, the governor of Kentucky raised the minimum wage for about 800 or 1,000 state workers. You know, so it's catching. It goes. The most important message to me in that story is not the tremendous impact that's going to have on the lives of people. It may not be a good enough wage, but to go from $9 or the federal minimum wage of $7.25 to $15 over the next 3 or 4 years is going to make a tremendous difference in those people's lives. And that's 400,000 workers and their families. That's big. But the message is that the power initiative in America is moving out of Washington. Washington's stuck. The president proposed raising the minimum wage, the federal minimum wage, to $10.10 an hour. He did this 2.5 years ago. Congress hasn't done anything. But instead of sitting here wringing our hands about that, which we can do, other states have moved ahead. We now have 28 states in the country that have higher minimum wages than the federal minimum wage. More than 60% of the workforce in America is now working under state law, which has a higher minimum wage than the federal law. Now, the message there is you don't have to stop there, and you don't have to just deal with the minimum wage. You can deal with family leave. You can deal with student debt. You can deal with a whole lot of other issues, but you can do it locally. And we may be at the beginning of a new progressive era. People may or may not remember, but you think back to Teddy Roosevelt and the trust busting of the early 1900s, women getting the vote, the whole push for the women's vote, women's suffrage, the push for the 16th Amendment for the income tax, the push for direct election of senators. People forget that in the late 1890s and the early 1900s, we didn't have those things, and it was a popular push that created those things, which are now part of our lives. We take it for granted. Well, if they could do it then, we can do it now. And I think that's what, to me, is so important about that. It's the same thing with the SeaTac story about raising the minimum wage, or the Colorado story about rolling back Citizens United and trying to get a grip on things in terms of the mega money that's now drowning our political elections. We can do something about that. Almost all those things have state regulations. California right now, by the way, has the best public disclosure law for smoking out dark money, and they actually smoked out a Koch brothers dark money network.
Yeah. We're going to have to continue this right after this quick turnaround. We'll be right back with more Hedrick Smith. Don't go anywhere. Whoa. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Danielle here with Shano, and we're speaking with the one and only Hedrick Smith, Pulitzer Prize-winning New York Times journalist, PBS producer, and author of several books, including the latest Who Stole the American Dream? The website we're discussing right now is his ReclaimTheAmericanDream.org. And Hedrick, you were saying, you were telling us all how it is we go about reclaiming the American dream, something I think so many, too many, feel is just not a possibility anymore.
You know, it's a fascinating story. The name is Market Basket.
Yes.
The supermarket chain up there in Massachusetts, New Hampshire, Maine, up in that part of New England, it's 71 stores. It's a $3 or $4 billion corporation. It's big. It's not like, you know, your corner grocery store. It's a chain that's got some clout. And there's been a big fight going on in the family that has largely owned that supermarket between one branch of the family run by a guy named R.D.T. Demoulas, and he was in favor of profit sharing, shared 15% of the profits every year with the workers, gave workers good benefits, gave them good wages, and still managed to have, by the way, lower grocery prices than Walmart. Listen to that. Turning a profit, giving good wages and benefits, and lower prices than Walmart. And there were other members in his family with the same family name, Demoulas, but they were the cousins, and they said, no, let's take more profit out of the company. We want to pay ourselves more. They were unhappy with it, and Artie was actually going to up the profit sharing for the workers to 20% from 15%. They said, no, we need to take it down. We need to hold the lid on it. And they kicked Artie out. They had actually a few more shares than he did. There was a protest by the workers. These are not union workers. They walked off the job when Artie got fired as CEO by these super rich cousins of his. And then what happened was the customers started boycotting the supermarket, and stuff began piling up on the store shelves, and they finally had to get rid of rotting food because they didn't have enough customers. And then mayors in the towns began saying, you know, we should boycott this new management because they're really not good for customers and they're not good for the workers. And eventually, over a period of about 6 or 8 weeks, last summer, the pressure got so hard that finally the rich branch, or the super rich branch of the family, wound up by having to sell out. And Artie raised the good guy, the CEO who was pro-worker, he raised some money, believe it or not, he even raised some money from Wall Street, and he bought out the company. They brought him back. The point was, and somebody wrote on the web, it was really interesting, they said, listen, Mr. and Mrs. 1%, we are your constituents, and you need to listen to us. You can't ignore us. And they brought this guy back, and now the workers have gone back to work. And the supermarket chain is doing better now than it was doing before because it got so much good publicity because of the kind of guy he is. The point was that sort of grassroots civic action that developed spontaneously in an area wound up by saving a company from going down the track of so many other companies that are just concentrating the wealth for the 1% and leaving the workers and the customers in the dust. Now, can we do that everywhere? Can you force people out everywhere? No, but you can jump on the opportunities when they come. You can understand that you have power. Listen, there are shareholders that have been pushing to limit CEO pay. They're fighting for it. They're pushing resolutions. There are shareholders that now, I just did a blog literally yesterday. There are 28 companies that have agreed to reveal their political spending to their stockholders as a result of the pressure from the New York State Comptroller, because he represents the pension funds of the employees of the state of New York, and he's saying, we want to know. We're part owners. We've invested in your companies. We want to know who you're giving money to.
Yeah, well, there's been a lot of push.
Can do it. Why not everybody else?
Yeah, there's been a lot of push and a lot of public pressure on Mary Jo White and the Obama administration to say that any company that contracts with the government, that, you know, takes government money in terms of, you know, in exchange for its products and services, could be required to disclose its political spending as part of, you know, as an executive order. But yet again, as you mentioned, it's another victory in terms of what people are fighting for. And I don't think we take enough time to celebrate those when they happen.
Well, or to take a look at the ones, I mean, the one you've just mentioned, the Securities and Exchange Commission has the power to protect shareholders and to make sure that shareholders are informed by the management what they're doing with the company's money. Most American companies today do not disclose their political campaign donations to parties or candidates. And there are over a million people who have signed petitions to the SEC asking them to require companies as a matter of practice, along with all their other financial disclosures, nothing new, but just this is part of the package, you have to disclose how you're spending your money. Now, more people need to write in. More heat needs to be put on Mary Jo White and the rest of the commission to try to bring it out. There are two commissioners who are in favor of going the whole way, making every company do this. Mary Jo White's the holdout. There are two Republicans on the other side who say, no, this is interfering with private enterprise and we shouldn't be doing this and so forth. And the answer of people on the other side is, wait a second. This is representing the shareholders. These are the owners of the company. They're simply asking to be informed of what the heck is being done with their money in their name. So this is not a question of the government intruding in the marketplace. This is a question of the government helping part of the marketplace be transparent to another part of the marketplace.
Yeah, and correct me if I'm wrong. It was the Supreme Court justices themselves who said it was up to Congress and regulators to require transparency like that in order to make the Citizens United vote not be just flat-out corruption.
Absolutely. We got Justice Kennedy on the website quoted, and what he's basically saying is, you know, we're not going to agree to limits on campaign donations. We're going to let corporations spend anything they want on it. The disinfectant, the cure, the medicine is disclosure. You can do that. Disclosure is constitutional. You can get as much disclosure as you want, and what we're counting on is disclosure of who's spending what money and where the money's going from and to whom and who's trying to buy whom is out there, if it's out there in a timely fashion, before the election. That's the way to protect yourself
yep.
from a corrupt democracy.
And it is just one of the many ways you can get involved over at Reclaim the American Dream. Hedrick, thank you so much for your time and for inspiring so many people with this great website.
Danielle, thanks so much. I hope people find it useful. My object is to try to restore our democracy and make this economy fairer again.
I think if anybody can do it, you can. Thank you, Hedrick.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
The website is reclaimtheamericandream.org. Tom says, tag you're it. This is a way you can get involved. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Danielle here with Shane, sitting in for Tom today, talking to some great folks like Hedrick Smith. He really gets me inspired. I kind of feel like he is the component to Tom, where Tom says, get out there, get active, tag, you're it. You know, mm-hmm. that's Tom's line. And here is Hedrick with the Reclaim the American Dream site with tons of ways that you can get out there, get active, and tag, you're it. So.
It all makes sense.
It all makes sense. Shane's just laughing at me, shaking his head like you were such a dork. I know.
No, there's nothing wrong with that. No, there's nothing. And as you do get frustrated, there are times you've seen me.
Same here.
And I've seen you where you just get so riled up and upset, and yes. and you things are so rigged, and you get down and upset, and you feel like you know Tom always says turn that negative energy into action. If action makes you feel better, and of course as you just said, those are methods to
right.
the action.
So we do want to hear your thoughts on that. If you have ideas of ways we can reclaim the American dream or ways we can take it back, we would love to hear your thoughts. And we're still taking your calls on what it would mean to you if the Supreme Court strikes down ACA subsidies. Let's check in with Thomas in Flint, Michigan, listening in on FYI Nation. Hi, Thomas. Thanks for calling today.
Hey, guys. This means a lot to me because I have a pre-existing condition. I was born with a heart problem, and I've had it since birth. And I was always on my parents' care, and then they stopped working, and I had to be on my own without anything. And moving to Michigan, I finally was able to get on through Schneider was one of the few Republicans who signed the Medicare part, where you can get onto that.
Right.
And I'm nervous, to be honest, with how everything affects each state, what they're going to do, what the Republican states are going to do, and who don't want it. And I'm worried for other people like me.
Yes.
It's really scary right now. And this law is so
frivolous. It's funny. They talk about frivolous lawsuits, and this thing is ridiculous.
Yeah.
It drives me absolutely insane.
That is such an excellent point. That's their whole argument for tort reform, and that's their claim for why medical expenses are so high and why, you know, the cost of research and development and new products is so high is because it's all these frivolous lawsuits and we need tort reform. But excellent point. They are like the kings of frivolous lawsuits.
Yes, and that's exactly it. They always seem to be too happy more than we are, and that's their resolution to any law that they don't like. You know, Hobby Lobby and everything else. It's like, really? And you're the ones whining about tort reform?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, does anybody really want to go back? First of all, I don't think it's possible. I think the genie's out of the bottle. We can't return the insurance market to where it was before the law. But even if we could, do we really want to go back to lifetime limits, pre-existing conditions, not allowing college students to stay on their parents' insurance? I mean, who really liked that situation?
Well, that's exactly it. I mean, I wish it was a public option. I wish President Obama had fought for that, and really the Democratic Party had fought for that because they had control. But we didn't get that, and this is just as good and could be fixed, yes, but it shouldn't be torn apart. And that's what they like to do and then say how government doesn't work. And that drives me nuts with them, too, because they're always tearing apart government to claim how it doesn't work.
Right. And, you know, there are some, I will give credit where credit is due. As you said, Michigan, you know, expanded the, I think, the Medicaid.
Medicaid, yes.
And other Republican governors, Wyoming Governor Matt Mead, this from a post back in March over at Think Progress, said, you know, he admitted he is no fan of the Affordable Care Act, thinks it's unconstitutional, but he hopes that the court will reject the case and uphold the law.
Yeah, you have a lot of governors that are, you know, they're worried.
They recognize the risk and they...
These are red states, too.
Right.
And I think there's something like 22 GOP senators up for re-election coming up in these states that of the 36 states that would lose these subsidies if the Supreme Court were to go that way.
Yeah. But, Thomas, I hear you. And big thanks and preemptive thanks because... Tom and Nikki do a show that we're going to be on this weekend, right, Shane?
Yes.
Yes. So, Thomas, where can people check that out?
Sure. FYI Nation on TuneIn. It's For Your Information Nation Network on TuneIn or FYINation.com. It's Sundays at 6. We usually do an interview show or have, it's our pay it forward type thing, a cause day on Sundays.
Oh, that's great.
We do, interviews. We'll do a cause day where people can talk about their cause or something like that. And we do a show every day at 3 o'clock, on FYI Nation where we drop the occasional F-bomb and whatnot because we're not SEC regulated, so we can get away with that. But, it's fun and anybody is welcome to listen.
Well, thank you very much and thank you for inviting us. We're looking forward to it.
Oh, we are too. Thank you guys.
And thanks for calling in. Let's check in with Keith in Landrum, South Carolina. Keith, you had some thoughts on King v. Burwell.
Yeah, I'm wondering why nobody is bringing up the Chevron decision.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I thought Shane would like this call. I saw the note here.
Yeah.
So
actually,
Shane.
Tom brought it up yesterday, and he firmly believes that Chevron would be the basis upon which the Supreme Court would go the way we're not talking about here. In other words, they would say... Chevron is a two-part test, and correct me if I'm wrong on any of this. Chevron is a two-part test that if a law is written in such a way that it's ambiguous, that then the justices or a judge who's looking at the at how this law is written has to look at the intent behind the law, what the lawmakers intended to write. So if the Supreme Court justices find that this law, these four words, makes the law ambiguous, in other words, when they look at the whole bill, the whole law, and these four words don't fit, like if, you know, another one seems to directly contradict it, is that ambiguous? And if so, they look at the intent. The intent was to cover all the states, whether it was set up by the federal government or a state government. Therefore, all the subsidies stay. That's the Chevron test. One, is it ambiguous? Two,
and a shame on the Republican Congress for not changing the law. When the ACA was first implemented, the first thing that came out, the first thing that was changed was the 1099 rule, and all that took was changing one word in the law, and it automatically flipped. There was so much outrage about it that was automatically changed, but they can't change this.
Oh, they can. They can. Oh, they can. They just don't want to. This is their leverage. This is their way to tear it down, to destroy Obama's legacy. This is their way to deregulate the health insurance industry again. This is their way in. And they've been trying. You know, it reminds me of Velociraptors testing in different parts of the fence. And they've just been pecking away, and pecking here and pecking there, and see if they can find the weak spot. And they're going to, even if this one doesn't go that way, they're going to try to find another one. They're just going to keep pecking away, trying to tear it down.
You can tell we watched Jurassic Park this weekend. Yeah. Did that answer your question about Chevron?
Uh-oh.
Did we lose? We must have lost Keith. I think he thought he was disconnected there. But, nope. Keith, thank you for calling. We appreciate it. Let's check in with Rick in Irwin, Texas. Rick, thanks for hanging out with us today and watching the Tom Harbin program.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's Irwin, Tennessee.
Oh, sorry. It's right in front of me. I saw the T and just completely, my brain just shorted out there. Go ahead.
Yeah, our governor tried to get the Affordable Care Act for us, but the state assembly downed it a couple times with help from Citizens United. They gave up, I guess, probably since it's been going on, at least a couple, $2, $3 billion to this state. And I was thinking these insurance companies are not going to let this thing go to waste because they're getting so much free money. They're getting all them subsidies in our names, and they're not going to want to give that up.
Yeah, they have come out pretty strongly and said that they do not want these subsidies struck down, I mean, which is self-explanatory. As you said, they're getting a ton of money. But I think that there's I know not everybody can see us on TV. There's a case of the Supreme Court and Congress pointing at each other. You fix it. Oh,
sure.
No, you fix it.
Oh, yeah.
Where the Supreme Court can pretend.
And everyone blames Obama.
Right.
Yeah. You fix it, and blame Obama.
Yeah. The Supreme Court can pretend, oh, we're not really striking it down. We're just telling Congress to fix these six words. And Congress can say, well, that's how the law was written, and it was intended to be that way. And the Supreme Court said it was unconstitutional. And in the meantime, insurance companies, as well as the people that they cover, will be harmed from it.
Yeah, and you know what else I was thinking? You just brought up the Chevron rule. I just invented a new rule. It's they could use the Citizens United rule. By taking the subsidies from the insurance companies, they're infringing upon their free speech rights. If you follow the logic, the twisted logic of this court, that ought to be right down their alley.
You mean if the insurance companies take
the Supreme Court? Okay. If money is speech, right,
mm-hmm.
If they deny these insurance companies these subsidies, then they are infringing upon their speech.
They're infringing on the federal government speech?
No, they're infringing on the speech of the insurance companies because they're the ones that get the money.
If spending money is speech, why isn't receiving money?
Right.
Yeah. Why not?
Tried this actually out in Seattle. The restaurant... the restaurant said if we have to increase our minimum wage, that's going to reduce the amount of money we have in profits, and therefore we'll have less profits to devote to political speech, so therefore you're infringing on our political speech.
How'd that one go?
Not so well so
far. Not so well?
No.
Hey, I say as long as we should continue to fight these laws on the books like Citizens United, continue to fight against things like TPP, but as long as they're there, or if TPP goes through, why not get creative like Rick said?
Sure.
At least try. We might lose, but at least let's try and use the law to bring attention to the issues that we're fighting for. Why not? What do we have to lose? Why not?
We can pack hey, away at Citizens United.
If, you know, corporations can have speech, isn't the subsidies for insurance companies speech? Why not? Let's give it a shot. Anyhow, we'll be back with more here on the Tom Harbin program and back with Talk Radio News. Stick around.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Shane, your thoughts on that?
No.
No.
No, probably not.
Back with Talk Radio News right after this. Stick around. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman program here on Free Speech TV. Who is in their fund drive? So please contribute. You could get a Bernie Bear. I mean, what's better than that? You could get that really cool T-shirt.
Not this exact one.
Not that exact one.
Especially it's a little warm in the studio.
Especially not today.
No.
It's a good...
you get a brand new one.
Yeah, it's a good 85 degrees in the studio.
Which isn't too bad.
Compared to last year.
Right.
Yeah. It was over 100 in here some days.
Yes.
So we shouldn't be complaining yet. Knock on wood that the AC holds out. And let's check in with Dave in Armstrong Creek, Wisconsin. Dave, is that Dave from the chat room as well, Dave? Dave? Uh-oh. Do we not have Dave? Dave, if you can hear me, give us a call back. It seems like we can't hear you. And we'll check in with Ed in Klamath Falls, Oregon, watching on Free Speech TV. Thanks for calling today, Ed.
Hi. Hi, Danielle. Hi, Shane.
Hey.
I think that the whole Obama thing, Obamacare thing, is kind of immaterial. The state exchange could refer to the exchange established by the federal government, as the federal government is often called the state.
Yes.
Now, I know pundits have argued that. Did Don Varelli bring that up in the case?
No, not that I'm aware of. In terms of the state, meaning, you know, the
capital
United
S.
States.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, I understand what you mean.
Yeah, but when the G7 gets together, Obama is the head of state that goes to represent us.
Right.
The State Department doesn't handle disputes between Wisconsin and California. It's between states of, you know, Germany, England, United States.
Yeah, you have an excellent point. I'll tell you, it wasn't argued in front of the Supreme Court. I was there for it. So while you have a great argument, I don't think it's ever going to come up in the decision, unless the Supreme Court generally doesn't take arguments that weren't before them and then say this is the ruling. So while it's a great argument, I don't think we're going to hear that at all.
But I think it makes just about as much sense as anybody who
conservative
who can claim that they wrote this entire law and deliberately put in a measure that could take the whole thing down. I mean, that just doesn't seem logical to anybody.
As long as the word state is ambiguous, I think that you can't knock it down and say that it means one thing or the other.
Well, and if the word state is ambiguous, then it would be able to use the Chevron
test.
The
one thing I have to check on, because I personally have not read all of the bill, I've read a lot of it, is whether or not state is defined. The word state may have been defined at some point in there or in the general obligations law. We have the United States Code, and state may be defined somewhere. So I don't know if that may have been one of the things that got in the way. It leaves it up in the air still, though, I would say.
But it's something to consider. It's we can certainly make that case.
I'll tell you, it's capitalized in the statute when it says, you know, through an exchange established by the state. State is capitalized.
And I would think the fact that it's capitalized implies that it's meant the state as a whole, as in our nation state.
Hmm.
You don't capitalize state, you know.
Sure, when I say state of Missouri, I put you capital S it, or state of New York, it's capital S.
Do you?
I do. I think that's in most style books, yes.
I can't recall having written it one way or the other, but I'm with Ed. I think that if I'll take Ed's argument. If it keeps subsidies in place and keeps health insurance available to millions of Americans, I will use whatever definition you want.
I'm not saying I disagree with that. I say it's a great argument. I'm just saying it isn't one that was presented.
Yep.
So therefore, chances are the Supreme Court won't hinge their decision based on something
that wasn't
argued. And
chances are there may be something in the law that
perhaps
prohibits this from being used. But thank you, Ed, for the suggestion and the call. Thanks. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Danielle, here with Shano, and on the line with us is the one, the only, Ellen Ratner of the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, goatsfortheoldgoat.com, and free-don.org. I think I got all those right, Ellen. How are you today?
And just to remind people, Father's Day is coming up, so give your dad a goat, and we'll give him a certificate and a picture within 6 months. Certificate goes out right away.
Yeah.
Goatsfortheoldgoat.com.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So, lots going on. I think the most interesting thing, I mean, these people are, you know, to cover up whatever he's got going on, Senator Graham is now trying to get a bill to the Senate floor, which passed the House, and he said that banning abortion 5 months into pregnancy makes us a better nation.
Meanwhile, I have on Tom's desk, right in front of me, Ellen, that the U.S. now ranks 33rd in terms of the maternal death rate. And it could be even worse than that because not all women who die during childbirth are recorded. 33rd in the developed world as far as how well we treat pregnant women.
It's pretty crazy,
yeah.
Right?
Yes.
I mean, it has very little chance that it's passing, but it is going to. He is trying to.
It's just a talking point. So he can seem tougher. He has to talk about war and manhandling women and their rights.
Right, but that's where he is at, and that's what he's talking to reporters today about. Can you believe it?
It doesn't surprise me, but it's still shocking.
Okay, some other things going on. Speaker Boehner is still pushing for his fast-track authority. That is happening today. And I don't know if you're aware, but apparently there was a Gulftainer. They were awarded a 35-year lease in Port Canaveral, I believe that is in Florida.
Yes.
And this was a Project Pelican deal. The deal was stamped by Jacob Lew. Apparently, there was a Clinton Foundation donation that some people, the right wing is saying, is connected. I do not know. But people are very concerned that this deal is a security nightmare. I just want to know one thing. Why are we giving out leases to our ports to anybody from a foreign country?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I have an issue with, I take issue with anybody even selling our roads and bridges as they do. Florida is one that's high on the list for doing this. China owns quite a few roads in Florida. Why are we giving them access and control over our ports?
Right. And that's what I want to know.
Yeah, that seems like a security nightmare.
The people are saying it is, and it's very near one of our bases.
Yeah. There's military bases right there in Central Florida. And that's also where our space, agencies are.
Right. And that is a very big question. And you know something? Normally I don't agree with the right. They're all upset about this. But sometime a stop clock is right twice a day, and on this one they are.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. Wow. So what else is in the news?
Okay, so that's Jeb Bush is now saying that the United States should have more troops in Europe. I mean, you cannot make this stuff up. Why, if he's running for president, is he over there talking about that kind of stuff?
In Europe?
Yeah.
To any particular country in Europe?
Well, he thinks we ought to shore up the number of people on our bases. Can you believe that?
Our bases in... Europe is just such a broad
whatever, and,
description.
Jeb Bush is saying he's in Europe. He's in Poland today. And he said, I do know we need to expand our presence here. We ought to have more significant presence in this region. He said, right now, American soldiers in the region only number in the hundreds, which doesn't send a signal of strength.
So, essentially, it's about Ukraine, most likely.
I'm sure it is, and I'm sure it's all about Russia. I mean,
yeah.
But, like, the Europeans at this point can't handle their own security?
Well, and it never fails to amaze me that we just assume that we can put our troops wherever we want throughout the world without asking foreign nations whether or not they'd like us there.
And I'd like to know what Jeb Bush is doing there anyway.
Yes. Excellent point.
So, I mean, okay, he's running for president, et cetera. A couple other interesting things.
Sure.
There is now I believe it was the Secretary of Defense who said today that they're looking in bases in Iraq and they want more troops, but no one has asked how many contractors there are in Iraq or how many they intend to have there.
Wow. The way that they've kept troop numbers low is essentially using private contractors, private military
Absolutely.
Companies like a Blackwater, Z, whatever their name is this week.
One of my hosts today said to me, hey, Ellen, in the olden days, they were not called contractors. They were called mercenaries.
Yeah, and I would say if the name fits, wear it.
Exactly. So that's some of what's going on. I am very concerned about this port deal. I'm concerned about Senator Graham. The head of the United Nations today said that military operations have put Boko Haram on the defensive, and it's now starting to look ahead to the stabilization phase in order to secure military gains. Now, they said that Nigeria has been able to do this because they've gotten support from their neighbors, Chad, Cameroon, and Niger. And they also said that the new president has gotten really has made Boko Haram have to leave one of the cities. And they also say that the resources are now close to Lake Chad, and therefore they have much more opportunity to route them out. This is very interesting because the last president of Nigeria didn't do a heck of a lot.
Well, is there any parallel there between that and the fight against ISIS, that when the neighboring countries and the surrounding area comes together to fight this type of force, that they're successful?
Well, that's a very good question. And, you know, I honestly don't know the answer to
food
that.
Food for thought.
But I think that's a very good question to ask.
Well, Ellen, thank you very much. I want to remind everybody, go over to Goats for the Old Goat and get a goat for Dad. Thank you, Ellen.
Thank you.
Ellen Ratner of the Talk Radio News will be back with more right after this.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Danielle here with Shano, trying to fill in for Tom today, having a great time speaking to all of his amazing listeners. One of the big topics that Tom has spoken about for, I think, months now, and we still have a chance to impact, is SHAFTA, a.k.a. the TPP. One of the other leading voices on that has been Ari Rabenhoff, host of The Agenda on SiriusXM Progress 127, which you can check out at morningagenda.com. Ari, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, guys.
You wrote an amazing piece today over at theobservers.com, Bipartisan Agreement, Foreign Governments Pay Former Senate Leaders to Sell TPP. Long story short, how is this anything other than foreign countries bribing former lawmakers to pass legislation that would impact all of our lives?
The only addition to that is how not surprised people are. I mean, what's amazing is, and I think this speaks to it, is when I pitched this piece, to a number of publications, The Observer ended up taking it, but when I was going around pitching this piece, the reaction I was getting from a lot of D.C.-based groups, now The Observer's in New York, so they're a little bit different, the reaction was, so, foreign governments lobby, yeah? I was like, but isn't it something that we should consider, that Japan is spending millions of dollars, that Vietnam hires the brother of Hillary Clinton's campaign chairman, that Tom Daschle is going to work for Japan, that all of these countries are hiring American lobbyists and bigwigs in Washington to lobby for them and spending millions of dollars on it. Like, isn't that somewhat problematic? And what was more amazing is I started calling around to some of these guys, right? And one of the biggest guys in D.C. who is in this business is a guy named Frank Seminolis, right? And he is a partner at this firm that if you don't live in D.C., you won't know about. And if you do live in D.C., you definitely know about. It's called Squire Patton Boggs.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's one of the biggest lobbying firms in the world. Right? It's enormous, giant. Now, Frank runs one of their international trade divisions. Now, let me give you an idea of this guy. He's never been an elected official. He was a congressional staffer for 3 years at the end of the 70s and then moved into lobbying. Right? He represented Peru when they had a free trade agreement in the United States. He represented Colombia when they had a free trade agreement with the United States. He represented Korea when they did a free trade agreement with the United States. And now he represents Singapore's sovereign wealth fund, which is the country's takes its own money, its government money, and invests it in things. He represents them, so basically the government of Singapore, for the TPP. And I basically said, look, can I just ask you about what you do and why you do it? And he said, sure. And one of the most amazing statements that – just pause for a second and think about it. And this was a direct quote, and he sent it in an email. So also think about that, right? It's this is par for the course in D.C. There is nothing illegal, or in fact, some would say there's nothing even unethical about it, but it should give you pause that this is normal behavior in Washington, D.C. He wrote to me. I'm just going to quote it straight out. He said, quote, at least half of my time is devoted to providing intel on U.S. developments and likely future actions. Let's think about this. Foreign governments are paying American lobbyists to to provide them with intel.
Yeah.
Think about that for a second. And that is normal. That is considered like okay behavior in Washington. That's what Tom Daschle is doing for Japan right now.
Yeah, I think it's telling, just as you said, the D.C. publications were like, yeah, no big deal. I don't think the American people would agree with that. I don't think that the American people think that it's okay that Japan spends $600,000-$700,000 lobbying to get the TPP passed. I mean, it just begs the question, how much do they stand to gain that $700,000? And we let's be honest here, we know that that's probably a fraction of what they've actually spent, is considered a worthwhile investment.
And I'm 6 months behind in reports because you don't get we'll get a bigger picture in a few weeks. And just to give you an idea on, I was like, well, maybe people are right. Maybe this is nothing. Maybe people don't care. But the reaction on social media has actually been crazy to this piece. You know, thousands of shares on, like almost 1,000 shares on Facebook, for example, already within a few hours of it posting, which says that people are finding this compelling, that people are like, oh my God, I don't like my government being sold this way.
Yeah, and this is exactly what people have warned about when it comes to things like Citizens United and when it comes to these massive agreements is, you know, foreign companies spending millions or more to influence our government, our lawmakers, at the same time when our lawmakers aren't being responsive to us. I've heard calls going into Congress are 25-1 or even 40-1 against TPP, yet you know, Japan spends $600,000 and we're still at risk of even getting this trade agreement?
Let me tell you something that is, speaking of people not being responsive to their constituent needs, my friend Murshed Zahid, who works with Credo, an organization that I've worked with, part of, like, I think one of the best progressive organizations out there, right, for a long time, he's with them, and he tweeted out, and this should just shock everybody. And this is what he tweets. He tweets, per call reports, meaning they told their members, hey, call Nancy Pelosi's office, and then people will tell them what happened when they called, right? This is what he wrote. He said, per call reports, Nancy Pelosi's office cutting off Credo Mobile members from speaking out to stop fast-track and TPP. And he included a picture of the quotes he's getting back. And they're, as soon as I started talking, the staff member dumped me into voicemail, rudely.
Wow. Like,
and these go on. So Nancy Pelosi's office is refusing, according to Credo Mobile, refusing to talk to constituents about this.
Yeah, I believe it. I answer phones for Tom day in and day out, and I have people calling me from all over the country telling me their reactions to calling their Congress members, their senators, about this. And the newest one, first it was that nobody would give a position. Nobody would give a response because they wanted to see which way it was going to pan out first. The latest that I've heard is that now they're claiming they're just passing TPA, fast track, to learn more about TPP. That's the latest talking point. And if that doesn't, you know, floor you, I don't know what does. That we'd even consider a massive trade agreement that you haven't seen and you have to pass legislation that says you're not allowed to amend it before you get to see it?
And I'll tell you, look, I guarantee you, these lobbyists for foreign corporations know more about the trade agreement than you or I.
Oh, yeah.
And for no other reason than you'd think if somebody's lobbying for Japan. Remember, Japan has seen the TPP, right? They're negotiating it. They know what's inside of it. Don't you think they've probably shared it with their lobbyists?
I think they have, and that's probably why people are spending, you know, $700,000 to make sure that it passes here in the States.
I mean, and by the way, you should say that's $700,000 over six months ago.
Right.
My bet is when the final lobbying reports come out in probably a month or two after this passes, the reason I wanted to write this now is because I wanted to write it before the bill passed Congress, right?
Yep.
I didn't want to wait for the reports. When these reports come out, I guarantee you we will see a staggering amount of spending, a staggering amount of action, a staggering amount of activity in them that will blow people away.
Yeah, and this is just a lobbying group. This doesn't count what these foreign companies, foreign governments are paying to senatorial and congressional campaigns and super PACs.
Some of it actually will end up in the reports because when they have to file the final reports, which will be interesting to see in 6 months, because these are actually – they're in a database called FARA, which is a Justice Department database.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, if you're lobbying for a foreign country or foreign entity, you have to tell You don't, it's not like lobbying where you have to tell the Senate that you're lobbying, right? You have to tell the Justice Department. This came from, this law, these laws actually date back to World War II, where we were concerned about Nazi propaganda in Washington, D.C. So people who were advocating for the Nazis, who were being paid by them, had to report it. That was the logic of this law. So you have to file a whole bunch of paperwork with the government. And when you do, you have to reveal all sorts of things in terms of every person you call,
it's
every media contact.
Amazing information. Ari, thank you so much for this report.
Thank you so much.
We'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Ari Rabenhoff, host of The Agenda. You can check it out, SiriusXM Progress 127, weekday mornings, morningagenda.com. Thank you, Ari. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program here on Free Speech TV.
Can I just say something about this?
Absolutely.
Do you remember the last time Samuel Alito, Justice Samuel Alito, was at the State of the Union? What famous thing happened when the President of the United States, during his State of the Union, called out Citizens United and how foreign companies and foreign governments would now be able to buy off our legislatures here in this country and how terrible that would be? And Samuel Alito got so red in the face and said, not true. It was a very famous moment, and
yes,
he never came to the State of the Union again. Well, I'm sorry, Justice Alito, it is true.
It is
read
true.
Ari Rabenhoff's article. It is happening. And we knew it was happening. I mean, how many ads have you seen from TransCanada about the Keystone?
Right. What do you think that is, guys?
Yeah.
What do you think that is? It just, and it all comes back to, you know, the best investment you can make as a business is a congressperson.
Yeah.
So what are these countries looking to get back that they're willing to invest what will inevitably be millions, likely tens of millions, to get TPP and TPA passed? They've got to know what they're getting in return.
Yeah.
So that should tell us all something right there. Let's check in with Corky in Hilton, New York, watching on Free Speech TV. Hi, Corky. How's it going today?
Good. How you doing today?
We're doing well. Thank you for calling.
I got to ask you, do you remember the Ronald Reagan administration?
No.
I do.
Okay. Well, glad you do. Remember when he got up there and said he wanted every country in the world who wanted democracy to have it, and we would stand by him?
Right. I know what you're talking about.
Okay. Well, that's what this Middle East thing is all about. They didn't want democracy. We forced it on them.
Right.
Now, the other one was the military corporate complex. They wanted to do away with all tariffs, so that they could get involved in business all over the world. And this TPP is an extension of that one world economy with no tariffs.
Yeah, decades we've all said that people who talk about one world government, new world order, were conspiracy theorists. But you look at this TPP, and all of a sudden it doesn't seem so out there.
Now let me finish my thought here.
Go for it.
In order to do that, you must destroy unions in countries that have strong union labor. Done. Check. Done.
Yeah.
You must lower the wages of the people that are making more money. It's like setting up a bunch of glasses on a counter, and you got to fill each one with water at an equal level. And then the corporate complex and the industrialists, they have free ride over the entire world economy and what the people earn and what the people can have. That's the best way to have control over everybody.
Yeah, it's a race to the bottom. And when you get a race to the bottom and everybody's struggling on, you know, poverty wages and struggling with social services that are failing or non-existent and crumbling infrastructure, you know, beggars can't be choosers. And when you level the playing field down to that low of a level, all of a sudden, you know, hey, $10 an hour seems like something we should all be cheering for. And moderate corporate-controlled health care, like we have with the ACA, is too much socialism for conservatives. Corky, excellent point. Thank you very much for watching Free Speech TV there in New York. We'll be back right after this. Wow. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Danielle here with Shano sitting in for Tom today. And if you want to call your member of Congress and let them know that you do not want Shafta, give them a call. 202
Obamatrade.
Obamatrade.
If they're conservative.
202-225-3121. Also, 202-224-3121. Both of those numbers work. I've checked them myself.
There's a big old story in Politico about the TAA possibly being what's going to get in the way of this.
Yes.
That essentially, you'll remember, and Tom spoke about this, that there was $700 million taken out of Medicare to help train people who are going to lose their jobs because of TPP. So they know that Americans are going to lose their jobs, so this is what we're going to do about it. And even worse than the fact that people are going to lose their jobs, we're going to take $700 million out of Medicare.
Right.
Now they're working on a fix for this, and they're having a problem fixing this before they can get the TAA, which I think is trade. Do you have it in front of you?
Trade Adjustment Assistance.
Trade Adjustment Assistance. And if they don't get Trade Adjustment Assistance, they're not going to get Trade Promotion Authority.
Right.
And the Democrats are getting in the way on how this, and I'm glad they are, on how this comes out.
Yes.
So if they can't get through TAA, we can't get to TPA, and therefore can't get to TPP. Got that?
Totally.
Yeah.
In other words, Democrats said that in order for TPA to pass, which I think...
Fast track.
Yeah, fast track. I think we should have higher bars than this. But in order for that to pass, they want this program that says if you lose your job when it's inevitably shipped overseas to a lower wage nation, that there's a program here to retrain you and prepare you for another job.
And they're saying we don't want you taking it from Medicare.
Right.
And we don't want you taking it from any other part of the social safety net. And the
right.
Republicans are balking at this. So this is they're having a hard time coming to a deal on this. And if they don't, they're not going to get Trade Promotion Authority.
Because if they don't pass this, they need 218 votes to pass. They are short of that or very close at the moment, according to this Politico article. If they don't pass it and they make any change to the law, the fast track TPA,
got
to go back to the Senate, and this whole process goes back again. And there's a lot of Democrats who are thinking that that might be our best option, that to continue to push this back and forth, you know, until public
and
opinion.
Off the cliff.
Right. Exactly. And Ari did some amazing reporting there on what I would consider bribery of
sure.
our politicians.
It's not just gratitude, as Justice Scalia likes to call it.
Right.
When you send somebody money and then say, oh, by the way, I'd like you to do X, Y, or Z because I support X, Y, or Z, that's bribery, not just gratitude for the money you sent.
Right. And this is flat out, you know, bipartisan. This is money going to lobbyist groups that they don't care what letter you have after your name, as long as you will vote the way they want when push comes to shove.
And I mentioned this during the break. Very famously, the president during one of his States of the Union, when Justice Samuel Alito would still go to them, President Obama mentioned the fact that Citizens United was going to allow foreign governments, foreign companies to lobby and spend money in elections here. And Alito got very upset, visibly upset, and you could see him say, not true.
Right.
From you know, the gallery there in the House. And we can see from Ari's reporting, well, no, it probably is true.
Right. And, you know, that is blatant. We're talking about dollars and cents
right.
going to lobbying firms that inevitably ends up
in... His argument would be, well, it's going to a lobbyist, it's not going directly to the candidate. But
lobbyists who put that money in the super PAC, get more people to go put money in your super PAC. You know, it's all a big
money laundering
one hand
scheme.
Washes the other. Yes.
Money laundering.
But that's
scheme.
Not the only way that supporters of TPP are pushing for these votes to pass. The president and the administration are doing the same, according to a new report from Public Citizen. This
uh-oh,
over
the goodie bag?
Yeah. This over at Common Dreams, Public Citizen has a report, what they quote here, a cautionary tale to members of Congress who are now contemplating the administration's pledges over political cover. In other words, the administration is going to these Democrats who are continuing to oppose the bill and say, if you pass it, you know, we'll give you rides on Air Force One. We'll help mm-hmm. you pass infrastructure legislation in your state. We'll help you survive the political backlash
so it's a TAA
of a for, yes vote.
So it's TAA for politicians. It's Trade Assistance Authority for politicians. You
yes.
can keep your job, too.
Yeah, I wonder what happens if your job as a lawmaker disappears because of your support for trade. Do you are you also eligible
well,
for
just,
assistance
that's what
under the TAA?
I'm saying that this is Obama, essentially a special TAA for politicians who may lose their job for voting for fast track.
Right. I have so many problems with this. This is so D.C., so Washington. I have so many problems with this in and of itself. If you can pass infrastructure legislation, if you know you can make that a priority, why aren't you doing it?
Yeah.
Why are you holding out until you get a corporate, pro-corporate trade deal? You know, and I'm sorry, if a lawmaker can be swayed by a ride on Air Force One, can we just put somebody else in their office?
Yeah.
Because, you know, that is about as low as it gets. But it's bribery all around. All around. Anyhow, let's check in. We have time for a quick one with Marsha in Englewood, Florida. Marsha, thanks for watching Free Speech TV.
Hey. Hi, Danielle.
Hi.
How's it going?
Hey.
One real quick thing I want to mention is yesterday or the day before on Daily Cause, somebody printed an article that stated Bernie Sanders is not saying enough against the TPP by just saying no to it. He ought to publish everything that's in print right now that WikiLeaks has leaked. It's already in the computer. He ought to publish this stuff.
Well, it's already published. It's already, I mean,
right.
He's already, it's already there.
Bernie needs to publish it.
Okay. Well, I don't speak for Bernie, so maybe you should give his office a call and suggest that, but go ahead.
I think I will do that. But the other thing I wanted to call about is yesterday I was listening to C-SPAN. Cronin, who's the majority whip, was talking about everything against the TPP, but then he finished it by saying that we're going to end up, unless we agree to this TPP, we're going to end up getting sued by Mexico and Canada and the World Trade Organization because of a prior agreement for our cruel labeling.
But we've already been sued by Mexico and Canada in the WTO, and we lost. So I don't see how adding insult to injury and passing the TPP or the TTIP or whatever the next acronym they come up with is going to change that. We should be dumping these horrible trade deals, not adding to them. But interesting spin there from Congress. Thanks for sharing that, Marsha.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
Do you want foreign companies influencing your lawmakers on trade? Give us a call. Let us know your thoughts. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Danielle here with Shano in for Tom today. It is so much fun and such an honor to sit here and get to talk to all of you guys.
And it flies by.
It does.
It's like, shoo, gone.
Yeah. Well, because these listeners and watchers and guests are so smart, I feel like a sponge sitting here absorbing it all.
Given how warm it is, you're going to, you know, it's going to come in handy. I'm trying to figure out how to.
Out that sponge? Yeah, that's funny. Let's check in with, Dave called back. Dave in Armstrong Creek, Wisconsin. Thanks for calling back, Dave. Sorry about that before.
Oh, that's okay. How are you guys doing?
Doing very well. How are you today?
Great. I want to talk about the ACA a little bit.
Sure.
About 8 years ago, I was laid off from a job. I also had a pre-existing condition, didn't have any insurance. I had an accident that required surgery, and subsequently I got a staph infection in the hospital again and ran up a huge medical bill that I'm still paying off. So, but the thing is I was watching C-SPAN this morning, and the subject happened to be the Affordable Care Act. Is your insurance or worse or better or just the same? And there was about 50-50 negative positive. Well, a couple of the negatives made a couple valid points. They were self-employed people that couldn't qualify for the subsidies, and they couldn't afford the insurance, which is true. And what the ACA did, in my view, is that it modified a lot of the insurance companies' bad behaviors. Like, they couldn't kick people off, or you have to give people insurance. The pre-existing condition thing. And the bottom line to me is when you're dealing with for-profit insurance companies, the prices are there. They control the prices. And if they had a public option, to have to compete with, I think the prices would come down.
I think not only the prices would come down, but I think some of the policies that we're still getting so frustrated with and that are still impacting people's lives would change. You know, like these really limited networks. Insurance companies don't need to do this. It's a bunch of nonsense. They're contracted with that doctor that's, you know, five blocks away instead of three blocks away. And, you know, in that building as opposed to this building, they work with that doctor. They just don't want you to have access to that because if they make it as difficult as possible, you won't use your insurance.
Well, yeah, and I agree.
Yeah, but, you know, it shouldn't be that way. 8 years and you're still paying off a medical bill? That's...
Well, I'll probably be paying it off for the rest of my life.
Yeah, that's astronomical.
Know, it didn't take that long of a stay in a hospital to rack up, you know, to me, the way I'm paying it off a little at a time, and I am trying to pay it off, I probably will never get it paid off.
Yes.
Fortunately, I have Medicare now, which, you know, is a lifesaver for me. And one of the guys that was talking about, you know, the small businessman, he pointed out that he's 63 and he can't afford it right now, but he's praying he's not going to get sick until he qualifies for Medicare. So he's almost promoting single payer right there.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, there inevitably are going to be gaps. And when you're still dealing with insurance companies whose, while we can modify their behavior, their goal is not going to change. Their goal is to make as much money as possible. They are banksters. They are banksters who are paying medical bills. That's what insurance companies are. So we're never going to change that. We can take them out of the system using single payer, absolutely, or compete with them and put them out of business with the public option. I think those are great ideas. When people, you know, call in like to a C-SPAN and say, this is what went wrong, or we had a caller saying with a very strange story about how, you know, she got a $500 subsidy, made a couple thousand dollars a year more and got a zero subsidy. Didn't make a whole lot of sense. One, some of these stories are because you're writing a large bill that's trying to cover a bunch of different situations and a bunch of different actors whose, unfortunately, their motive is still profits. So they're going to try to maneuver around. There are going to be some gaps. And if we had a Congress that was willing, that actually cared about the American public and the American consumer and the American citizen, instead of their own politics in destroying this president, these types of things could be fixed. So when we say there's this little problem in the Affordable Care Act, blame Congress, not the Affordable Care Act.
Yes.
These are minor things that can be fixed. This is what's before the Supreme Court, as we said starting the show, can be fixed in less than a page.
Yeah.
I mean, barely any ink at all.
Right. Well, and, if you don't like a single-payer system, okay, I would prefer that we get there eventually, but why don't you just make the public option available? If
sure.
You're so in favor of free markets and you think that competition is the panacea that solves every problem, then let us, as the public, compete with the marketplace with a public option. And, hey, if it fails and nobody signs up, then you were right and we were wrong, and we can all laugh about it someday down the line. But until then, what are you so afraid of? So,
well, healthcare shouldn't be for profit anyway.
Right.
Amen.
Absolutely.
I agree. Dave, all excellent points. I do want to get to a few other calls here while we have time, but thank you for watching and for calling back today. Let's check in with Todd in Fullerton, California, watching on DirecTV. Thanks for spending the day with us, Todd.
Absolutely. I've got a question for you. And I know that if the Supreme Court shoots down ACA, there's going to be a lot of pain, a lot of suffering. But do you think that if that happened, it would change people's view on voting? I mean, right now, there's been no ramifications for filling the House full of these Tea Party Republicans. Nobody's been hurt by it. We can put these non-serious point makers in that won't pass laws, and it's okay because the wheels keep spinning.
Yeah, I think people have been hurt by it.
If ACA is overturned, the wheels will fall off.
Yeah, I think people have been hurt by it. Look at the story of Charlene Dill in Florida who died because she couldn't get Medicaid coverage despite working three jobs to support her family. And to be fair, more people voted for Democrats than Republicans in the House by 1.5 million votes. But gerrymandering has left the Republicans in charge.
I agree.
But, yeah.
You know, I'm just thinking something has got to turn people's views around to start voting for their own interests.
Yeah.
Because the only reason why only 1.5 million people voted more for Democrats is because probably 5 million were voting against their interest.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
You know, I was,
that number probably should have been 6.5 million or 7 million.
Yeah.
And that's why, and what you're talking about right now is why the battle lines in terms of King v. Burwell are already lining up. You're already seeing Republicans out there talking about how this is all so-and-so's fault, whether it be Obama's fault or it's all the Democrats' fault. And the Democrats all along have said, well, you are the Republicans who won't fix it and have brought the lawsuits. But the blame game goes on to make sure that at the end of the day, when millions of people get thrown off of their insurance, if that is indeed how the Supreme Court rules, the Republicans already have in place a way to blame Democrats, a way that they have a solution that really isn't a solution for you that's going to sound a lot like liberty and freedom.
Yeah.
Yes, it would be great if people were to say, wow, that is the last straw. I've had it with the Republican Party. They should disband. Tom has actually advocated we should just disband the entire party. I would wish it would happen. Unfortunately, there are going to be those who get cynical and upset and say government doesn't work for me. And
there are still people who
there are people who are going to get energized and they're going to go march in the streets. I think that there's no one way it's going to affect, but you know, we'll have to wait and see on that.
There are still people who say that the Affordable Care Act is socialism and it's going to ruin our country and that it's a good thing if the entire law falls apart. And don't count for a second the amount of lives that are impacted if that happens, that there are people who will die, that you don't get to say you're pro-life and say that it's okay that 10,000 people a year die because they don't have health insurance. Those two points are incongruent. You cannot be pro-life and anti-health care. It's just not possible. The thoughts are incongruent. But whether or not they'll realize, if they haven't realized yet, despite
it could be a learning lesson.
Despite war, all of it.
We've seen some teachable moments, some learning lessons of people who have gone out there and said, I was against Obama, I was against the Affordable Care Act, and I have all these bills, and you know, I've changed my mind. Sometimes when it affects you personally, that's when things shift.
Oh yeah, I have a family member I can think of right now.
So it does happen.
Who was anti-Obama, anti-Obamacare, used even as far as using racially charged language online about it that we had a disagreement about. And all of a sudden, that person found out that they could get health care for $30, despite really serious health problems. And it's funny how that tune changed. I just don't want people to have to get sick and face living without health care to make
cost.
That realization. I mean, I know that might be a pipe dream on my part, Todd. I would like to think that people don't have to get sick and die before they recognize the error of their preferred policies. So, but thank you very much for calling.
We have time for a very, very quick one.
Very, very quick one. Let's check. Liz in Columbia, Missouri. Liz, Obama trade?
Might be really quick. We're not going to don't have enough time.
I'm going to put you on hold and we'll check back with you in a second. But it looks like Liz, I don't know if she can hear me, got great reception with her Republican representative by using Obama trade.
Really?
As opposed to TPP. I think, Liz, you could be on to something there, and perhaps that's the way to go to convince.
Well, when they polled a bunch of people and said, are you in favor of the Affordable Care Act, it got higher numbers than when they polled the same people and asked them if they were in favor of Obamacare.
Yeah, but I wonder if that would work in reverse. Like, if you call it Obama trade, are Democrats going to support it more?
I don't know.
Really?
That's why Tom often says, if you're talking with a Republican representative, use the term Obama trade.
Yeah, well, we'll check in with Liz after this break and see if she wants to share those thoughts with us. We'll be right back after this.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Danielle and Shano here in for Tom. What's on your mind? Welcome back to the Tom Hartman program here on Free Speech TV. Let me check in one more time with Liz, who is watching on DirecTV, and see, we may not be able to hear her. It may be one of our phone problems. Liz, are you there? Going once, going twice. Liz, if you can hear me, hang up and give us a call back so we can get you back in and on to talk today. Let's check in with Scott in Dublin, Ohio, watching on Free Speech TV. Thanks for watching today, Scott.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing very well. Thank you.
I love this program, man. This is what got me hooked. When I first started listening to the radio, it was with Rush Limbaugh, and I didn't hear anything that addressed anything that I was concerned about. And the first time I listened to this show, I've been hooked to serious since.
I know the sentiment.
I was just joking, saying
I knew the sentiment.
What I was calling about is that guy that said he was self-employed and he couldn't get health insurance. But if you're self-employed and you make, say, $120,000 a year, you claim your, like I own a truck, you claim your truck payments, you claim your maintenance, you claim anything you had to do, you know, gloves, boots, clothes, whatever, and pretty soon you see you're down to where you're not making a profit. And then once you do that, you turn that into the IRS, you get back a statement saying how much you made, and it's usually, if you didn't make a profit, it's under the poverty line. And when you do that, you get free Obamacare, you don't get no bills, and so I don't know what these people that are self-employed are talking about, because I know how they do it.
Well, I suppose depends on how they define self-employed. Because you could be self-employed and own your own business, own a corporation. You
could
be self-employed
as an independent contractor,
right,
which can be a real problem.
Right.
That's a problem in the tax code completely.
Right. But in most of those situations, I would, and I am not speaking from experience by any means, wouldn't you still be able to write off the cost of a premium against any potential profits, just as you would if you paid for it for an employee?
Exactly. And that's what I'm saying. So if it's
Shane, you're looking at me like that's wrong.
I don't know.
Yeah.
It's next to nothing. If you know, so I don't know what they're complaining about. And how you get people to quit voting against their interests, that what the Republicans do is put a black face on everybody else's interests. And that's how they get white people to vote against their interests.
Yeah. Well, you know,
yes.
I would think that these people who are self-employed, hey, if the TPP passes, can't they sue government and say that they're at an unfair disadvantage because other companies, other countries, other people in that agreement don't have the cost of health care?
No, see, I would think it would be the other way. I would think that foreign countries that are part of the agreement who provide health care to their citizens, that they have an unfair advantage.
Yeah. I think we're saying the same thing, just in different directions. Yeah.
That essentially that cost hasn't gone into the products, so you have an unfair competitive advantage.
Right. You have U.S. corporations who have to cover the cost of insurance for their employees and compete against companies overseas where that's provided by the government.
Sure.
Hey, just spitballing, considering some thoughts here.
I think there are better ways to go about it. That's
for sure. Yeah, I'm sure. But let's pursue all options, whatever we can do to get health care for everyone. We'll be back with more. Stick around. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Danielle, here with Shano, in for Tom today. And it looks like Liz got back through watching on DirecTV.
Yeah.
Thank you for calling back, Liz. I'm sorry about that.
Hi, Danielle. Hi, Shane. You guys can hear me now?
Yep.
Yeah. Great. I am in a little blue spot in the middle of Missouri called Columbia. It's a university town, but we are represented by a Tea Party representative, Vicki Hartzler, and I called her office about the TPP and called it, as Tom suggested, Obamatrade. I had the best reception I've ever had from her office. They wanted to know more about me. They want my address, my name, everything. Usually I call in and it's like, okay, well, we'll pass you on. Yeah, whatever I complain about. So
it was an
unusual reception.
I have to give it to some of the Tea Partiers. They are standing with a lot of Democrats against the TPP, kind of in a similar fashion of Rand Paul standing against the NSA. Whether or not it's for political purposes or their honest beliefs and ideology, I don't know. But whatever, I'll still credit them where credit is due.
Representative Hartzler is one of those Tea Partiers who also takes a lot of government welfare. She has a farm, a ranch, and she's been getting close to $1 million since the mid-'90s in farm subsidies. So, you know, she can probably see where her bread is buttered and that the TPP may not benefit her either.
Yeah, especially as a farmer.
I'm looking at her website right now, and it seems she's very much in favor of it. I hate to tell you. Vicky Hartzler is her name.
Oh, is that right? Yeah.
Yeah. Under trade, she has a lot of pro-TPA articles on here. I would say that. And she cites
that. I usually don't have much stomach for being on her website or on Facebook. Although I have had fun battling with the trolls sometimes. I had a troll mance with one in particular for a couple days in November after I fell, and I was kind of like home ridden and just, you know, typing on the computer for a couple days, and that was it. And we had quite a good time battling back and forth. But you know, after a few days, I was feeling better, and it was like I was tired of that cat toy.
Yeah. I'll say right here on her website, it says we need to ensure that the U.S. not countries like China, is writing the rules of the global economy, which sounds very, very reminiscent of Obama's arguments
in
terms of in favor of TPP.
Yeah, I would be curious of what her Tea Party or supporters feel about her so closely aligning with the president.
Yeah.
Just curious. Just throwing that out there.
Yeah.
Just inquiring minds would love to know.
I thought it was interesting that they were all of a sudden, at least the assistant, more interested in me that maybe I'm a Republican after all, you know, kind of thing.
Interesting.
I'm looking forward to my shiny packet in the mail, which I may be getting.
Yeah. The interesting part, Liz, thank you very much for the call and for watching there in Free Speech TV. The interesting part is, as, you know, so many people, like this representative she's mentioning, gets $1 million a year in farm subsidies. We want to protect her subsidies. Her own party is the one that would like to take them away. We would like farm subsidies looked at, so they're going to small farms, which may sound like a lot, but if she's getting $1 million a year, she is a small farm compared to Monsanto and these giant corporate behemoths. That subsidies are going to her and protecting her ability to farm and provide produce or whatever it is that she provides, as opposed to it coming from another country, or as opposed to her party that wants to destroy the farm bill and only give it to the big Monsanto groups.
ConAgra's.
It's interesting. Just interesting. Hmm? All right. Let's check in with Denise in Calumet, Michigan. Thanks for spending time with us today, Denise.
Hi. How are you doing? Can you hear me?
We can hear you. Thank you.
Okay. Good. I'm just calling about the Affordable Care Act. I have a good handful of friends. One person, for sure, his life was saved. Another person told me yesterday it is the best insurance he has ever had in his life. Blue Cross doesn't touch it. And, you know, what's happening to these hospitals, when people have bills, are going after people for their for their money, and even if they're making payments. I had one friend was making a $900 payment, and they wrote him a letter and said, you have to pay $2,500 a month, or we're going to take your home and your business.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Who can pay $2,500 a month in a rural area like this?
Right. Or anywhere.
Or anywhere.
Anywhere.
Who can pay $900 a month? I mean,
yeah, that's amazing.
That's more than rent for most people. You know, that's more than your house payment.
And then they write back and they say, you know, we're going to take you to court unless you pay $2,500 a month.
Well,
and they're dictating.
I would guess, and I'm not, you know, I can't speak for this particular instance, but in my background of dealing with hospitals and insurance companies, I would guess that this is a for-profit private hospital sending this, or that they have privatized their
collections. Yeah.
Yeah, it's Duke Life Point.
I'm not familiar with that off the top of my head, so I can't say one way or the other, but a lot of it's for profit.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the state and county hospitals, people can criticize them or say that it's, you know, they're not as good, but they work with people. They also have charity care or financial assistance available so that people aren't stuck paying $900 a month when they can't afford it. But they get subsidized to do that through the state, which is also being cut in these, you know, budget cuts that we see all throughout the country. It really is stunning. But, you know, real people are benefiting, and they'll be in jeopardy is essentially your point, Denise, right?
Right.
Yeah.
If they lose this, they're going to be up in a world of, you know, they're not going to have a good life.
Yeah.
So
it shouldn't even come down to that at all. Thank you very much for the call and for listening there in Calumet, Michigan. We're the richest country on earth. We spend more money per capita than any other country on health care. And we have individuals trying to survive while paying $900 a month.
And being demanded $2,500 they're going to take their house.
Right. $900 a month? You, you should be able to have the Cadillac premium of insurance that covers your, you know, elective nose jobs for $900 a month. Yes. We have to get a better system, but it starts with protecting and ensuring that the advances we've made don't go backwards. So, you know, call your Congress, 202-225-3121. Let them know about SHAFTA. Mention the ACA. You know, you want your subsidies. You don't want TPP. Thanks for spending time with us today. Thanks to Jim and Lori and Sean and, of course, Tom and Louise for helping us, allowing us to sit here. Thanks so much. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.